But if one's on the stat platform of Nishta, then that won't be there. So that's particularly for this Amanina Manadena. One talks about this this particular danger. Bhakti Vinod, Bhakti Siddhanta talks about it there. Some ideas of this Nishta platform that's indicated here by Kirtaniya Sadaha. See, what happens is one engages in bhajana kriya, the practice of devotional service, the sadhana, the process. So in the beginning, that practice is anishtata. It's unsteady for various reasons, up and down, on again, off again. But then nishta means when that same bhajana kriya now has become steady or fixed up. And that's and of course the indication is there from the Srimad Bhagavatam. It says that the Shinvata Swakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtanam, this famous verses 1, 2, 17 and 18, that this that the chanting of the hearing and chanting about hearing the talks about Krishna, Punya Shravana Kirtana, they are Punya, they have spiritual potency, they're virtuous when heard and chanted. Pedyantasto Hibadrani Vidinoti Sarittatam. They cleanse the heart of inauspicious things, abhadra, things you don't want. Then, the next verse, nasta prayeshu abhadreshu. When those abhadra, when those unwanted things are almost, not entirely, but almost entirely, nasta, destroyed. Nityam bhagavata sevaya, through the regular performance of devotional service, going to Bhagavatam class, serving the devotee. Then Bhagavati Uttama Shloki, Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki. Then Bhakti becomes Naishtiki. Naishtiki comes from Nishta. Prabhupada says, is established as an irrevocable fact. Irrevocable, not irrevocable. You happen to be in educated circles. People may know the correct pronunciation of this word is irrevocable, not irrevocable, as we say many times in this gone. Irrevocable fact. Means it won't go away, so it won't... it's fixed. That's why this is naishtiki from Nishta. So the words nashta prayeshu abhadreshu, almost a small portion of anadras is still not destroyed. So Nishta means to have the quality of steadiness, naishchalyam. And then he mentions there's five obstacles towards steadiness. We've discussed three of them. Laya, sleep, vishepa, distraction, apratipatti, indifference or disinterested in spiritual topics. Vishaya, the tendency toward bad habits. And rasavada, taste for material enjoyment. At the stage of anartha nirvritti, when these obstacles are almost completely destroyed, after the stage of anartha nirvritti, when these obstacles are almost completely destroyed, one achieves steadiness. Thus the symptoms of nishta is the absence of these five obstacles. We discuss laya, Kshepa Pratipati. Kshaya refers to the, Kshaya means tendency toward bad habits, he says here, it's translated here. The innate tendency toward qualities like anger, greed, and pride. So once in a while, you know, it'll pop out. This is when you least expect it. Rasavada means the inability to absorb the mind in kirtan and other services if one gets the opportunity for material sense pleasure. This is rasa, taste from, there's still some taste for material enjoyment. So as long as you avoid temptation, okay, but you get in the presence of it, you might succumb. So that's the stage of Nishtha. Any questions on this particular verse? Yeah?
I did have one question. You wouldn't mind going back to the Chaitanya Charitamrita discussion of it.
Mm-hmm.
When he mentions text 22, this dui prakara, the two kinds of humility or tolerance station, and I wasn't quite sure. Then the next verse it talks about the tree being cut down does not protest, and when drying up asks for water. Whether that was the two kinds, or whether the reference to furthermore,
that's the two kinds.
Complaining, he goes ahead
and Bhaktivinoda Thakur calls that the second. The second of the qualities. That, I don't know about the word here for. I've forgotten. I looked it up, but I forgot Sahishnu. What that actually means, you can look it up. But the two kinds of tolerance are this magnanimity, even when one is the ability to endure things without complaining, and at the same time to be magnanimous. That's the second part of it. It's just like a deeper level of that tolerance.
Could you give the references?
In Chaitanya Charitamrita? Uh-huh. Well, in the chapter called Ansha Lila, the whole Shishastika prayers actually begins the discussion with text 11, and it goes through to quite some time. Anyway, it begins at 11. You can find it from there. So it's Ansha Lila 20, starting with text 11. These particular ones discusses the third verse from text 20 through actually 28. Okay. Anything else? Yes.
You mentioned compassion without envy. When you say the word compassion, it always implies the lack of envy. So what would compassion with envy look like?
I think it's just intensifying the sense of compassion. But you can sometimes show compassion in a grudging mood. When charity is done in a grudging mood, you may say that's compassion, but the grudging mood is there. That's charity in the mode of something, of forgot which one. Passion or ignorance, I forgot which one. I think it's ignorance. Resentful, begrudging. Where the either goes blank or some gibberish is going through it, your free association. Instead, that it should chant. It's not very good when you're chanting japa to drive. On the other hand, while you're driving, if you chant, it's very good. Because in a way, you should always be chanting. Because I remember Prabhupada was in the car with somebody and he was chanting, just, you know, Hare Krishna, not singing necessarily, but just chanting Hare Krishna. Prabhupada was happy to see him. But I think he felt safer. The driver was chanting. Naturally, you will not have the same absorption, undivided attention that we should give the name while we chant japa. Until the very advanced stage of Krishna consciousness, where Krishna drives the car for you. One should not imitate the stage. It takes charge of the senses of a devotee. How can a devotee be in samadhi, which is in fact undeviating attention to Krishna, and still go through the world and do things because Krishna takes charge of his senses, and runs them, look at this, look at that. This happens naturally. Otherwise, you have to sit down in some jungle and stay still and let the vines grow up around you. Just the samadhi. You can achieve the same samadhi while active in the world because of. Okay, we can go on and start looking at the next verse now. So we can move on with dispatch. So here, this is a nice, this indicates, according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the next stage, which is that of ruchi, or taste, for the activities of devotional service. And correspondingly, we see in this text, no taste for other things that may be attractive to a devotee. Na dhanam na janam na sundarim kavitam va ragadisha kamaye. Na 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 means not, not, not. I do not desire these things. Dhanam, janam, and sundarim kavitam. Now, here, dana means wealth. Jana means literally people. Which Prabhupada translates as followers. And sundarim kavitam he breaks it up. Sundarim, a very beautiful woman. And kavitam, fruitive activity described in flowery language. Kavita means poetry. Poetry. Like the word kavya is high Sanskrit poetics. But the word sundarim, it would seem grammatically speaking, is really functioning here as an adjective modifying kavita. In other words, beautiful verses. I do not desire beautiful verses. Prabhupada here splits them. I do not desire a beautiful wife or fruit of activities described in flowery language. I mean, the kavita is the flowery language of the Vedas, you know, that mentioned in the second chapter that describe heavenly planets and things like this. Now, the reason I bring this up is because Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives a slightly different purport to this. So we want to. So we'll get back to what this means. Manma janmani janmanishvare. So manma janmani janmani. Janmani janmani means birth after birth. Ishvare means here unto the Lord. Bhavatat, let there be. Let there be, it's a prayer. Let there be bhakti ahetuki twai unto you, the Ishwar, the Lord. Let there be. The word ahetuki we know, with no motive. And ish janmani janmani, life after life, birth after birth, means also there's no interest in performing this for the sake of liberation. So that the different things that motives that people have, he's not interested in wealth, followers, beautiful women, fruitive activities described in the Vedas. We'll see some of the other possible meanings of this. All those things, not even liberation, just give me this. Let there be, bhavata, let there be. Give me the benediction of causeless devotional service, birth after birth. So this is ruchi, a taste. Taste for the activities of devotional service. Now I want devotional service so badly that now I have no taste for anything else. It's in itself, it's so nice, that's all I want. Just increase it. But here he's again, notice he's praying for something. Very fervently, actually. So, discussing this Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, I do not hanker for wealth, dhanam, a following, janam, or beautiful verses, sundarim kavitam, described as beautiful verses. Here, dhanam refers to the wealth of piety, accrued when one strictly follows the path of varnashram dharma and related karmakanda activities. Further implies the paraphernalia one needs to fulfill his sensual desires in this life and to ensure further luxury and sensuality with the next birth in the heavenly planets. Janam refers to wife. So there's the wife, is now in the Janam people. Wife, sons, servants, subjects, friends, and relatives. The proper understanding of education and learning is that which generates attraction and attachment for the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. The phrase sundarim kavitam thus does not refer to scriptural narrations of Lord Krishna's pastimes. That may be beautiful verse. But to mundane literature, like Shakespeare, or other dry philosophical and esoteric technical subjects. In other words, it means the beauty of advanced learning that is not related to Krishna in this rendering. Sundarim kavita. Or maybe it means beautiful poetic style. Now, Bhakti Siddhanta, I think, has a slightly different take on it. O Lord of the universe, I have no desire for material wealth, following, or beautiful poetry. You are the object of my worship and devotional love, life after life. I only pray that I may have unconditional love and devotion at your lotus feet. Sundarin Kavitam refers to the religious principles of the Vedas, which Bhaktivinoda Thakur said that's in Dhanam. The wealth of piety accrued in the Vedas is Dhanam, and therefore also material wealth. Here he says, Sundarin Kavitam refers to the religious principles of the Vedas, Dhanam refers to wealth, and Jana means wife, children, relatives, etc. Then his gloss on this, I do not merely abhor sense gratification derived through religiosity, wealth, and lust, but I am appalled at the idea of temporary mukti, a liberation from the cycle of birth and death. I refuse to be enticed by these four Vedic goals, dharma, artha, kama, and moksha, but I want only to render service at your lotus feet. So although there are different ways you can read these words, the purport is the same. In all cases, wherever you put the dhanam. Because Bhaktivinoda Thakur does have some songs where Kavita Sundari, it means beautiful women. he sometimes also takes the other tactic on this in Bengali, when he does a Bengali rendering, not wanting anything. The Kavita Sundari, beautiful woman. Sundari, the word Sundari by itself just means a beautiful woman. Radha Sundari, she's called Sundari sometimes, like that. Not a modifier necessarily. So I was happy to hear this because, you know, I think sometimes beautiful poetry is more of a problem than other meaning for me. Or you're just attracted to beautiful a beautiful mind. You know, those in academics, a beautiful mind. You know.
I was just noticing he had these songs that he's talking about, these songs about Shikshastra, and there he doesn't match up anything in one thing to another, but he goes through and the whole list of Dehasuka, Vidya, Dhana, Jana, Swarga, Moksha, and even mystic powers.
Uh-huh. So one should not desire Vidya. This is in temptation, mundane knowledge, or even, sometimes we've seen devotees in the movement, they get so attracted to just learning verses and knowing shlokas and all this other stuff, it becomes an end in itself. So that's a temptation to be avoided. But I just wanted to clear that up because when you read, here in this translation, they put Prabhupada's translation, which has, Sundari is a beautiful woman, and then Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary, who gives a different meaning. So people who read this book may become confused. But that's just different ways of reading it. I think Prabhupada wanted to precipitate this out, because he wanted to make a point that this is a temptation for his followers more than learning.
Isn't So what are you saying then? I mean, some people who study verses, do you mean the regular verses?
Yeah, even the regular verses, it can be for its own sake.
Just a little proud? Or just
yeah, yeah. It's the pundit thing, you know. It's the show off my learning thing. Or just to become enamored of it. I mean, the Vedas are very attractive. I mean, this is the Vedic context, and you know, when you get into academic study or just learning, you get it for its own sake, and it can be a temptation. You can become very learned and lose your soul in the process. Learning circles are full of lost souls. So it can be a temptation, even in the context of studying the Vedas. You forget what the purpose is. You just are learning for its own sake. It's a temptation. Omniscience. or you can just become enamored by it. So all these things that are there, dhanam, janam, sundarim, kavitam, they should be used in Krishna service, and there's no harm.
So if we wanted to use Shakespeare, the verse we learned, or we wanted to actually review something we heard in one of these philosophical books, just to use in our preaching, because other people are attracted to it, that's okay.
Yeah.
But we have to be cautious.
Yeah, well, I mean, I gave a lecture once at Gita Nagari. I gave a Bhagavatam purport to a Shakespeare sonnet. The expense of spirit and a waste of shame is lust in action. I mean, it's just to show people that all these things that was maybe imported by Prabhupada from the far esoteric realms of the East was actually sort of common understanding in Europe up to a certain point in time. A great deal of what Prabhupada did was a common understanding. Up until the end of the Renaissance, then it all got dumped out. So it's not necessary that you go to Krishna consciousness. Even historically, you're going to something that's all that foreign. It's not. And I think that whenever there's actually something of a God-centered society, these things, same values, will be concomitant factor automatically. So we want the Middle Ages to come back, but with computers and laptops. The significant thing about this verse is given here. Well, first of all, just notice that is a fervent prayer for this one thing, this devotional service that's free from any extraneous desires. It's for pure devotional service. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, the soul's struggle to triumph over repeated birth and death and other material miseries is beyond him. For such victory depends entirely upon the Supreme Lord's will. This is this bhavatat. In other words, now the expectation for further progress is I simply put myself in a position to constantly beg for the mercy of the Lord. Period. Now what do I beg for? Just pure devotional service. How will it come? When he gives it. And my attitude is one of just waiting with hope and eager expectation, but a great deal of patience. Because he gives it when he wants. Because it's also causeless. It's his own sweet will. And that's what's in this verse.